yesterday's attacks and other things.
Some say that he does have ties to Muslim extremists. I don't know.
After the 9/11 attacks, one can argue that the collapse of the Twin Towers ignited the flames of imperialist wars by the British and US establishment. Both countries and their allies attacked Afghanistan in a bid to destroy Al-Qaeda and used the same excuse to illegally invade and occupy another Middle East country. The Bush administration expressed their justifications for the Iraq war to Congress. This was done by representing that Iraq planned, as well as authorized, committed and aided the 9/11 attacks. Blair's government claimed that Iraq was another inevitable target on the war on terror. He pushed Britain to a war destined to be a quagmire. Almost 13 years after the invasion, just in a matter of 2 weeks, the truth emerged in both countries. In the United States, a long-classified US report that was released found that some of the 9/11 hijackers were in contact with and received support from Saudi Arabia. While in Britain, the scathing Chilcot report exposed Britain's flawed reasons for waging war in Iraq. And yet, despite the thousands of man-hours and millions of words that went into the 12-volume report, there remain some significant questions which, frustratingly, still need answering. The most important question the Chilcot inquiry tends to ignore is whether the invasion was legal in the first place. In January 2003, Lord Goldsmith gave Tony Blair advice on the legal issues, which no one else in the cabinet saw. On the 7th of March, which was 12 days before the outbreak of the war, Lord Goldsmith delivered his view that the safest legal course would be for the US and the UK to persuade the UN Security Council to pass a new resolution authorising military action.
At one stage, my provisional view was that taking all these factors into the balance, there wasn't enough there. The balance came down in favour of saying no, a second resolution is needed.
By the 13th of March, when it was apparent that there was not going to be a new UN resolution, it became apparent that the invasion would be legal nonetheless.
I then ultimately reached, when I had to reach a definitive view on this, a different view.
Not only does Sir John not offer a judgment on whether the war was legal, he does not answer the intriguing question of why the Attorney General, Lord Goldsmith, altered his legal advice just days before the tanks rolled across Iraq's borders. The report rebukes Tony Blair for the foreword he provided to a dossier presented to Parliament in September 2002, which referred to Iraq's possession of WMDs as if that were a known fact.
It concludes that Iraq has chemical and biological weapons, that Saddam has continued to produce them, that he has existing and active military plans for the use of chemical and biological weapons, which could be activated within 45 minutes, including against his own Shia population, and that he is actively trying to acquire nuclear weapons capability.
Chilcot reports never answered the question of whether Blair knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
How to put it, marketed rather hard for the political purpose.
Many of the witnesses to Chilcot had an inherent interest in bending that truth, in pretending that they were misled, in presenting themselves as not guilty, as not culpable in a process of deliberately misleading the public to support an illegal war.
The Chilcot Committee also accepted that Tony Blair firmly believed that those WMDs existed. Was he not misleading Parliament? And if not, would it not be helpful to clarify the matter?
In July of that year, I know I was told by someone very, very high up that we would be invading Iraq with the Americans. And I had a meeting with my fleet command team, and I said I want the Navy and Marines ready for war in the Northern Gulf, because I had no idea of what the operation was going to be, by the 31st of December this year. That was 2002.
How high does very, very high up get?
It wasn't the first Sea Lord. It wasn't the first Sea Lord, and it wasn't as high as you can get, but it was very high up. That's all I'm willing to say, really.
Right. You presumably told Lord Chilcot all of this, right?
Well, I was never asked by Lord Chilcot to give evidence, so I'm delighted.
I'm sorry.
I'm delighted I won't be.
The first Sea Lord of the time was not asked to go and speak to Lord Chilcot.
Absolutely. I was not asked to speak, but as I say, I'm quite delighted because hopefully that means I won't be involved in anything that spins out.
But people are going to find it absolutely incredible that such a crucial figure in the whole build out of war was never spoken to by Lord Sir John Chilcot.
The report also falls short of clearly indicating how destructive the invasion was for Iraqis. From the outset, Blair emphasized minimizing civilian casualties, largely to sustain domestic support for operations. However, the government initially made no effort to record numbers of Iraqis killed or injured. Eventually, responsibility was ping-ponged across Whitehall, but numbers were not determined and figures from external studies varied greatly.
Take a look at the ICC, International Criminal Court. Black Africans, or other people the West doesn't like. Bush and Blair ought to be right up there. There's no crime, recent crime, worse than the invasion of Iraq.
Well, what he did was to commit a war crime. There's no question about that. That was a war crime. I think what happened was he gave a private assurance to Bush that if Bush wanted to attack Iraq, he would support him. And I think that may have influenced Bush to go to war, because he thought, at least I'll have Britain on my side. And if it was a war crime, then clearly he could be sent to The Hague.
Thirteen years ago, Catherine Gunn, a then linguist with intelligence agency GCHQ, received an email from the US National Security Agency asking for intercepted communications of UN Security Council delegates. The US wanted any information that could be used to win the delegates over to its case for invasion. She leaked the email, and headlines accused the US of using dirty tricks to build a case for war. Gunn was charged with breaching the Official Secrets Act, but the case was dropped when her legal team asked to see all the legal advice given to Blair in the run-up to the war. She was never questioned nor asked to participate in the Chilcot inquiry. How far did the surveillance operation proceed? Whose communications did they intercept and record? These are the questions the Chilcot report did not even touch. Of the 2.6 million words the report contains, torture is mentioned only a handful of times, and even then, almost exclusively in the context of Saddam Hussein's regime. Whilst the implications of torture prior to the 2003 invasion are omitted from the report, so too are the public inquiries into allegations of torture by British personnel during the war. Under usual circumstances, a report of its magnitude would have commanded headlines for the days following its release, perhaps even weeks. The 2003 invasion of Iraq was one of the most significant foreign policy decisions in Britain's recent history. Yet within 24 hours, and particularly once Tony Blair had made his official statement, the media had brushed it to the side. With so many political stories to cover in post-Brexit Westminster, the report of the Iraq inquiry simply got swallowed up.
I think it's actually one of the tactics of this elongated Chilcot report is to kind of put it on the long handle, which is a classic British establishment trick, is to make sure the sort of investigation lasts so long that people have moved on to other things.
The Iraq inquiry ought to mark the culmination of 13 years of recommendation, but it will not be the last word.